Hello and welcome to the Leading Through Uncertainty podcast. I'm Jude Jennison, host of this podcast and founder of Leaders by Nature, a leadership and team development company. I believe that leadership is about who we are being as much as what we are doing, and that when we combine our brilliant minds with the emotional engagement from the heart, we can solve all of the world's problems. In this podcast, I interview leaders on their experiences of disruptive change and ask them how leaders can position themselves for the future. Find out what this week's leader has to say. Wendy Dean is the CEO of Strategy Solutions, a business consultancy offering services around people, creative and marketing. Wendy talks about the anxiety that comes when thrust into the uncertainty of major change and how she looks for opportunities and generates new ideas to turn that uncertainty into certainty. She reminds us that excitement and fear are physiologically the same, and therefore how we can choose how we consider the uncertainty of change. Wendy is pragmatic about the fact that some people like the status quo and talks about how important it is to lead change in a way that doesn't burn people out. Have a listen. Hi, Wendy. Thanks for joining me today.
You're very welcome.
Can you tell the listeners who you are and what you do, please?
Yes, my name is Wendy Dean and I'm the CEO of a company called Strategy Solutions, which is a business consultancy offering services around people, creative and marketing.
Okay. So, what brought you to this place? Can you give us a little bit around some of your history of why you're now doing what you're doing?
Yeah, I call myself the accidental CEO, actually, because I started out as a receptionist in a sheet metal works many years ago, and I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I'd been into the sixth form, I hated it, so thought in the early 80s I'd get myself a job, much to my parents' dismay. I think they wanted me to stay on the sixth form and do A-levels. But I went to the sheet metal works and gave me a bit of a baptism of fire, really, into the engineering sector. I was one of only two women there, so that was a bit of a shock. But actually, it gave me an opportunity to reevaluate what I wanted to do. I then fell into working for a company called Royal Ordnance, which was a small arms ammunition manufacturer that was local to where I lived. And it was there I got the opportunity to study for my personnel qualification, as it was called then, which is the CIPD now. So I went to college after wanting to leave education. I went back into education and I went to college for 4 years doing the qualification. And during that time, I got some real life experience of working with unions. It was a very difficult time with unions when I was working there. And then I decided after I'd finished the qualification that I wanted to try something different. So somebody recommended that I go and work in the logistics sector, which at the time was probably not that great. Went to work in logistics as an HR manager, had some fantastic opportunities there. I stayed at a company called ANC for 19 years and worked my way up to HR director. The company was bought out in 2006 by FedEx, which was a fantastic achievement for us. And then I went to work for a company called Steelite International. I wanted to broaden my ability to not just understand what was going on in logistics, but also from an HR perspective in terms of another industry. So I went into manufacturing. Steelite manufactures ceramic tableware for the hospitality industry. And as you can probably appreciate it, it was very, very old-fashioned, but very profitable as a business. And 40% of the product that it made was shipped over to the United States. So fantastic opportunity there. I did a full culture program called Stepping Up to the Plate, no pun intended, of course. And then from there, I was reaching the magical age of 50. I'd always wanted to have my own business, but for various reasons in my personal life, that didn't happen. And when I reached 50, I thought it's now or never, really. So I gave up my well-paid job to set up Strategy Solutions 8 years ago, Now looking back, I don't know what the hell I was thinking of. But it's worked out okay. We've got our own place now in Newcastle-under-Lyme in Staffordshire, and there's about 15 people who are full-time in the business, plus we have associates as well. And we're working with some large organisations like Smith's Toys, UV Cargo. We've worked with universities and schools. So yeah, moved away from just HR. We now do creative as well, which is things like branding. We do graphic design. We can create brochures. We can do digital marketing. And from that, we do also health and safety, learning and development. I'm very passionate about women's development and about women in business and women having equal rights in business. So I do a lot of work with that as well. And we still do HR. After all those things, we still will carry out HR. And that could be anything from advising companies on basic HR to actually full culture change programs, which is something that I've specialized in over the years. So yes, an accidental CEO.
An accidental CEO via the route of HR, which is often an unusual route, isn't it? I mean, you've cited a number of uncertainties along the way in terms of, ANC being bought out by FedEx, moving to Stealite. I know that there were some challenges that you experienced there. Can you share some examples of the uncertainties that you've experienced along the way and how you've navigated them?
Yes, I think my first experience really goes back to my ANC days. It was in 2000, and we were going along okay. I'd been there for quite a long time. Everybody seemed to be fairly happy with what was going on, but it was becoming a bit of a dead end, really. But people enjoyed working there. It was kind of a really good family feel. And then one day, we were all the senior team and all the management team. There must have been about, I don't know, about 60 of us at the time. We were all called to the East Midlands Airport Hilton Hotel one Saturday morning, which was a bit weird. We were all wondering what it was for. And this guy that we'd never met stood up in front of us and said, I've just wanted to tell you that the company at 11 o'clock on Thursday went bust. And I just wanted to let you know that 11:05 I bought the company and now I'm your new owner. And we didn't really know. The board had disappeared overnight.
Wow.
We were just left without a leader, without anybody that we knew of, on the main board. And it was a really scary time because we didn't even know the company was about to go bust. That was a really scary moment, and you could hear the intake of breath when he said the company had gone bust. And then when he said he was investing in the company and bought the company, then there's a whole load of breath came back out again.
Well, there must have been a whole range of emotions going through your mind at that point, because as the HR director, you were impacted in two ways, because obviously there's your own personal impact of, crikey, I'm working for a company that's gone bust and been bought out. But then also how on earth you then communicate and manage the HR processes and however many employees through that process. How did you manage the two in parallel?
Well, I wasn't actually HR director at the time. I was HR manager then.
Right.
And I thought I was going to lose my job, which was the first thing. And, as a typical woman, I also thought, will they want me? Will I be good enough? Will I be up to scratch? Will I be able to do the job? But not long after, the CEO actually got me into his office, and he was really good. And he said, look, we've got to change this company. We've got to change the culture. And we've got to get everybody to eat, sleep, and breathe the core values. And I remember thinking, good luck with that, because people didn't really want to change and they didn't want to do anything different. But he made me HR director, and he promoted quite a few of us at the same time and said, look, I'm creating this board. I'm going to give you all an opportunity. This is a way in which you can help yourself and get a career for yourselves, as well as make a fantastic company. And I took that leap of faith. And when we talk about uncertainty, it was very uncertain, but what was the alternative? That I got another job, or it didn't work out. And I actually thought, well, I think I can do this. So that's what I did. I went on this massive journey, and it was called Delivering Peace of Mind. And we created a whole culture with a vision and values. And within 6 years, we were all living, breathing, and sleeping those values. And I thought, you don't just have to stay in lane. When things are uncertain, there's a temptation to hunker down and think, right, I'm going to keep my head down, I'm going to carry on doing what I'm doing. Well, actually, when it's uncertain, it's a great opportunity to do something different. And the same goes really when I moved to Stealight, because I left Stealight, I left ANC because we'd been taken over by FedEx. Our success was so good that the culture that we had, FedEx saw that it was a culture that they wanted to invest in. But it wasn't for me working for such a large organisation, really. So I decided that I wanted to change industries and go and work in a different industry, which is why I chose manufacturing. And the opportunity there was, we're a successful business, we're making money, we export ceramic tableware all over the world, and this is a great opportunity to, do some culture change, improve communication, engage employees. How are you fixed? I thought, well, yeah, I've done this before, so that would be great. I was on a 6 month notice period, however, and this was in 2008. And by the time I'd completed my notice period, we'd started to go into recession. So I got to Stealight, and I thought I was going to lose my job before I'd even started. 40% of the order book fell off a cliff because America went into recession before we did. And I was trying to introduce this culture program whilst making people redundant. I had to put the factory onto 3 day working for a period of time. And again, that wasn't just uncertainty for the business I was working in, that was uncertainty for me. And I actually just grasped it with both hands, really, and tried my best to implement, this culture program, of stepping up to the plate. And actually, it was the best time to introduce change. Because people, up until that point, they were like, oh, we're okay. Now we need your help. And we made a massive transformation of the business. We had a lot of people that couldn't read or write that worked on the factory. So we trained everybody in maths, English, ICT skills. And because we did that, it actually got people more on board. And they were very uncertain about their jobs. So they grasped these opportunities thinking they would need to be able to have those skills to work elsewhere if the factory didn't survive. But it did. And we created new tableware, new designs. We introduced colour into tableware, which you see everywhere nowadays. And the uncertainty turned into certainty very quickly because we knew we were onto something very different. And we won the Employer of the Year award in 2012 for all that we'd done with the training and development of the people.
Fantastic. So the word that I'm hearing along uncertainty all the time from you is opportunity. Is that something that you think that we're born with, or do you think we can learn to look for opportunities in uncertainty?
I think we can learn to look for opportunities. I think most people, if there is uncertainty, will want to do the same thing or want to just bury their head. Most people. So I think you either are forced into it, or it's something that you have experience of already and are able to do the same thing but in a different organisation. So I would say it's not something that's natural to most people.
But it's something that, but what I'm hearing from you is that every time you've been up against it and in extreme uncertainty of, companies going under or budgets being slashed or not knowing whether you've got a job or not, every time you've hit that, what I'm hearing from you is you've said, well, I can either feel sorry for myself or I can look for the opportunity and then create something from it.
That's right. Yeah.
How do you, how, what would your advice be to others that perhaps, because as you say, most people, when there's uncertainty, they feel uncomfortable, their levels of stress increase, They want to hunker down and they want the status quo, and they scrabble around looking for how do we create stability. What would your advice be to people to go and look for opportunities? Because that's a very entrepreneurial way of looking at things.
Yeah, I wouldn't have said, when I was looking at ANC that I was very entrepreneurial at all, really. But now, when I look at when I come up against uncertainty now, I suppose really, what's the alternative? The same thing happens if you don't do something different. With what's going on at the moment in the, with the economy and all the uncertainty that's surrounding jobs and things like that, most companies are looking at cutting costs. When actually they should be looking at doing something different, because if things are getting tough, if you cut costs, that's only going to be one way. And I accept sometimes that costs should be taken out of a business, but really you should be looking at cost all the time in a business. It shouldn't be something that you do because you're in it, you're up your backs against the wall. So I would say that you should always look to do something different to get your way out of it, whether that be acquiring other companies that maybe haven't got the courage that you've got. That's one opportunity. Creating different product streams. A few years ago, we created something called Total Strategy, which was it was all about not just selling each service individually, but actually selling a client hours per month, and they could use any one of our services. Now, I'm not aware of many other companies that do that, but we were a little bit uncertain in certain areas because some areas of the business, say marketing, will perform better than HR and the other way around. But what if we sold all our services at the same time and created this opportunity for people to use the hours as they wish? And it really transformed what we were doing as a business and helped us grow.
Right. So what, again, what I'm hearing is every time your back's against the wall, you look outward for opportunities and then dive headlong into it.
Yeah, and it's not easy, but I think it's like anything. If you do it enough and it works enough times, then each time you do it, it becomes a lot easier. And yeah, there is always that little bit of nervousness, but nervousness and excitement are quite closely linked. So if you can get it to get some traction, then very quickly that nervousness creates energy, and then you can make things work. It's not foolproof. I'm not that stupid to realize that, sometimes it doesn't work. But if it doesn't work, stop doing it. I created an app some years ago, and I think it was for performance reviews, and I spent a lot of money on this app trying to get it up and running. And I think at the time the market wasn't ready for something like that. And it didn't get the traction I thought it would. But the easiest thing for me to have done was carry on putting money into it. And I didn't. I stopped investing in it and I moved it to one side. So, I'm not saying that you should just keep going headlong into things and keep moving forward. Sometimes you've got to say, right, that's not working, and try something else.
And there's something really refreshing here that I'm hearing from you as well, which is, it's having that foresight to look for the opportunity and then dive headlong in. But I'm not hearing it as a in a reckless way, and I'm definitely not meaning it in a reckless way. I'm meaning it in a, it sounds like you're considering opportunities and weighing up, knowing what you're getting into, or even not knowing what you're getting into, but continuing to look for clarity along the way and continuing to make decisions and either refine what you're doing or to say, actually, let's just call a halt on that for the moment.
Yeah, that's right. We have a bit of a joke about me in the office that if I come up with the same thing three times, then it's a serious thing, and we should start to look to implement it. Because I do have ideas all the time, and I wake up in the morning with ideas. I go to bed at night time with ideas, and not everyone is a good one. So I think with opportunities and ideas, if they keep niggling away at me in the background, then I know that it's worth pursuing, and we'll do more work on it, or somebody
Okay.
else.
So do you think that you're naturally an ideas person? Is that something that is part of your core skill, or again, has that been learned along the way?
That's a really good question, Jude. I think it is something that I've become more confident with as time has gone on. I remember in the early days at ANC sitting on the board for the first times, and I was the only female on the board, and I did wonder whether I was worthy of being there. And I would sit there and think of ideas, on how to get us out of certain situations or how to improve things, and I wouldn't say. So maybe I've always thought of the ideas. It's having the confidence to actually talk about them and to be able to present them to people that has probably got better as time has gone on.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I know when I did my coaching training years ago, one of the very I remember sitting there in the very first session saying, I don't have a creative bone in my body. I work for an IT company, and although I wasn't technical, I never considered myself to be creative. And I remember the facilitator, the coaching facilitator, saying, everybody is creative. It's whether we allow ourselves to open up to it. And I remember thinking, no, she's wrong. And it's only as I've grown the confidence in being creative that now I'm incredibly creative, and a bit like you, I'm not afraid to have an idea, and I'm not afraid for it to be a wrong idea or not relevant or not of its time, and to shut it down and move on. I mean, how do you? You're running a small business now with, I think you said, 15 employees. How do you encourage everyone in the business to be creative, and also to balance that with being pragmatic as well?
Yeah, it's a good question that is, because half of the business is in areas where it's not automatic that you would get people that are like that. So we've got HR, health and safety, and L&D, and then on the other side we've got graphic designers, marketing, PR. So they're very different, and it brings up some different challenges sometimes within the team. So what we do to overcome that is every 6 months we close the company down for a day, and we have what's called strategy, and we use that time to give people the opportunity to come up with new ideas. And it's brought out some fantastic things over the years. One of our apprentices actually came up with the idea of total strategy and said, why don't we sell all of our services to our clients rather than a bit at a time? So it's worked very well for us, and Helen, who works for us as our head of L&D, she does lots of exercises with us throughout the day, and we plan it way in advance. And we'll work on what team type we are. We've got people who are naturally very quiet and who don't want to say a lot, but sometimes have the best ideas. So we try and make it into a very very informal environment and a very friendly space. But sometimes, you do have to kind of tweak things out of people. And I've found that all through my career, whether that be with unions, whether that be with culture champions, you've always got to try and find a way of getting the quietest person to say something. And I think if you can achieve that, then you've actually, you can actually get some progress and some great ideas out there.
And I'm interested in your take of where we're at now as a market, as an economy, and as businesses, because you mentioned 2008, which was the last recession and a major recession. And yet now we're also experiencing severe uncertainty. We're post-pandemic. I think we can say that now. But there's the cost of living crisis. There's been the war in Ukraine. I mean, there's just been one thing after another. There's ESG, which is rising on the agenda, the equity, diversity, and inclusion. I mean, these are agendas that have been there, but they're more prevalent and they've got more focus on them. How do you think businesses need to respond to some of the issues that we've currently got?
I think the world has changed considerably over the last few years. I think I don't think we'll ever be the same as we were pre-pandemic, because I think it's affected everybody in the world. So it's not like it's just been in one area of the world. I think social media has a massive part to play. We're bombarded every day, every second with stories about things that are bad or things that are not great, or the predictions or whatever. And I think, that's not going to change. Those things will always be there. So I think companies have to think differently and think, well, that's the norm. We talk about pandemic still as though it's a new thing, but actually this is the norm now. And there's things that are still a hangover, probably from the recession in 2008. The way people do things, the way people, sort of make people redundant, downsize, or they create new products. So every time something like this happens, I think there is a little bit of something that's always left. So my advice to businesses would be to try and not think about that so much. I know it's difficult at times, but always look forward. Always be thinking forward as to what we can do as a business next, and what can we do that will provide a solution to a problem. Many companies get involved in thinking, we've got to do something different for difference sake. Well, unless you're solving a problem with whatever you're producing or whichever service, then really you shouldn't be doing it, because that's just a waste of time. And I think what uncertainty does is it makes us focus on the negative sometimes. So as leaders, and certainly for me, and lead, I've worked for some very, very good CEOs who've led me and the company I've worked through uncertainty. What they've done is they've always thought forward, they've always been very positive, and they've never let anybody see the pressure that they're under. And they've led us in that way, and they've always given people opportunity. So for me, they would be the key takeaways, really, Jude.
So it's, I mean, again, it's coming back to it's looking for the opportunity, isn't it? In terms of, recognizing that we're always going to have peaks and troughs and challenging times, whether it's within the business or externally to the business, that we actually need to keep moving forward and looking for those opportunities.
Yeah.
In the last 3 years or more, but particularly in the last 3 years, one of the things that I've noticed is that, we're talking less about resilience because I think everybody's resilient. But I wonder if you're seeing this as well, in that one of the things I'm seeing is people are more stressed than they were before, than they were pre-pandemic. And yet there's this continual drive forward for we need to transform, we need to look for opportunities, without necessarily in some cases recognizing that people are weary. And I wonder if you've got a handle on how you balance those two, because it's one thing to keep transforming and looking for opportunities, but it does require a level of resilience and being grounded and being in a space where you can actually be creative, and that doesn't usually come out of being completely stressed out. So I wondered, what your experience of that was working with other organizations and with your own.
Oh, that's a really good question, Jude. I think you're right. And I was reading an article the other day about this that said, if we are constantly looking to transform things, then we are going to, really burn out our people. So I think what we have to try and do is create an environment where it's okay for people not to have to get involved in that journey. And I'll try and explain that. So there are some people that are quite happy doing what they're doing. They love their job. They might be on a checkout in a supermarket. They love their job and they don't want to do anything different. The big mistake that that supermarket could make is they could say, well, we're going to change this, we're going to change that, we're going to change the other, and make it seem such a big thing that that person would then leave and go elsewhere. And it makes the change feel so big that they're prepared to change jobs, when actually that person never had a day off work, was always there on time, was always pleasant, was one of the favourites on the checkout, somebody that everybody loved to see. The person that does their shopping on a Thursday afternoon every week, they love to have a chat with that person. So everybody loses out by that. So I think you are right. We have to be very, very careful that whilst we're trying to aspire to this transformational existence, that we're very respectful of the people that work for us. Some people are in different times in their careers. Some people may be coming up to retirement. And over lockdown, I overheard so many people in their 50s, and I'm one of those people, talking about, you know, I'm going to take my lump sum on my pension and I'm just going to go down to 2 days a week in a supermarket. I can't cope with this pressure anymore. And I think whilst we talk about a drain in, you know, young people coming into the marketplace, I think the drain has been of the 55 plus, and that's a massive range of experience. And those people are the ones that will reassure other people that everything's okay when this change is going along, because they will have seen it before, just like I do. And I think, you know, companies just need to be very careful and very protective of that disruption and how it's affecting the people that work for them in terms of retention. That's a long answer to a
Well,
short
no, but
question.
I think what you know, again, the word that comes up for me is with opportunity and transformation, there also needs to be this balance between creating some form of status quo for those who want it. And obviously we need to gradually nudge people on the way, because we don't want people to get left behind. But there's this delicate balance between really considering the impact of the change before we just dive in and say, right, this is what the business needs, let's go. Like, really understanding, is that the right thing for the people? Because ultimately most businesses are people. And the two need to be in balance. How do you find that balance in your business?
I think we've got a mixture. We've got a very vast age group in the workforce. We've got people who are in the late 60s, and we've got apprentices. So we've got a massive in such a short, you know, small amount of people. And I think one of the things that I try and do is to engender intergenerational working. So we had, for example, one of the ladies that did some training for us until early this year. She's now retired, but she was working with an apprentice who was an analyst, who was working on putting things together for her, helping her to put the programs together, helping her you know, analyze the data that we were getting back from the feedback from the training. And they would never in probably a larger organization have ever worked together. And I really do try to do that, because there is a danger that people who are older feel isolated and they won't feel part of things. But there's also a danger that the younger people coming in feel they don't have their own way, and they don't have their own way of doing things. So I think it's trying to match that together. And I work very hard on that to try and get people to work in teams that probably they wouldn't normally work in, to get over that.
And that's your diversity and inclusion right there, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Probably I don't talk about it as much because of my HR background, but yes, it is. And, you know, I do so much work with women, and women, you know, can you know, we get it's things are a lot better for young women, I think, coming into industry today than they were when I was their age.
Yeah, definitely.
But, you know, I also think that whilst that is the case, there's still an opportunity for me to work with other women who are younger than me to try and, you know, help them navigate through some of the issues that they may come up against them, because they may be at a, you know, not a senior level when they and everything's fine now, but when they do grow and they get to senior levels, that environment may change. It hasn't changed that much, that it's not going to change for them. And I
No.
think it's trying to help give them the tools to be able to cope with that.
And also be the role models that we never had.
Yeah. We do a program called Why Women Don't Play Golf. And it's nothing to do with golf, really. It's about empowering women and helping with self-limiting beliefs. And I think, you know, we do an exercise called, you know, Who's Your Role Model? And it's quite hard for the women, other than their own mums. It's quite hard for them to come up with female role models, you know, or they tend to be the same person. So that's quite a
Even
thing,
now.
even now. Yeah,
Wow.
yeah, yeah.
That's fascinating, isn't it? Well, look, Wendy, it has been fantastic to talk to you today. Thank you so much for your time. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
The overriding word I get from Wendy is balance. She somehow seems to balance leading change without burning people out, encouraging young people in the workplace without overlooking the older workforce as well. Wendy balances growing a business with growing the people in it. Where do you need to be more in balance in life, in work, or in the way you lead? That's it for this podcast. I was your host, Jude Jennison, founder of Leaders by Nature, a leadership and team development company specialising in non-verbal behavioural change in leaders and teams. You can find out more about how I help leaders and teams communicate more effectively through change on my website, judejennison.com, or connect with me on LinkedIn. For now, keep leading, and I'll be back soon with another interview on leading through uncertainty.